Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
He joins us the first Monday of every month for Ask a Pharmacist Day. We really appreciate that. Of course, he is with Northwestern Medicine. He's a clinical pharmacist and the assistant professor of orthopedics at Feinberg School of Medicine. And you were recently in Washington, D.C. Tell everyone what you were doing there.
Yeah, I was. I was there for 3 days, about 2 weeks ago, Monday the 23rd through Wednesday the 25th. I sit on the board of directors of a Washington, D.C. lobby organization that lobbies for legislation and opioid policy at the federal level. So we were there. Our board of directors was meeting. Went with my daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, and we spent a Tuesday doing a education session for a lot of people that were there to learn a little bit about some of the opioid policy initiatives and things like that. And then Wednesday, we went up to Capitol Hill in the brutal heat. I mean, we're talking like 101-degree temperatures. And we went trekking all across the office buildings of the Senate and the House, and we met with members of Illinois and Wisconsin's delegations, and we were lobbying to get them on board with a couple of significant opioid bills.
I love that. I've been a volunteer lobbyist on behalf of the American Cancer Society back in the day when we were just, you know, lobbying for their effort to fund things at the National Institute of Health and help find a cure for cancer. And it's a long trek when you're going from office to office and it's hot and they're making you sit and wait. It's I applaud you because it takes some grit to get that accomplished. Is one of the concerns with opioids that in the new bill that was signed into legislation on July 4th, that the drugs that could be used to help drug addiction might no longer be covered?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of concerns that go into it. And certainly in the realm of opioids, that happens to be one of them. I think there's concerns about the volume of coverage that's going to be there for the care of people who are recovering from addiction. And that can be both medication related as well as in terms of therapy that folks are looking for to help them kind of get their decision-making back on track. I think, too, there's just a grave concern that with the reduced volume of money available to fund care, that you're always going to be looking for some of the lowest cost alternatives. And historically, when you're dealing with pain, the opioids have kind of pervaded for two reasons. Number one, they work well, right? I think that's important to understand, is that they do work well. But number two, they, in working well, they're also very cost effective because they're not a lot of money.
Yeah. I'm reading a book. You should read this book, Demon Copperhead. It's long and it's drawn out and it doesn't look like it has anything to do with the opioid crisis in Appalachia until you get well into the book. And it's just a tragedy. And, you know, you might think that, well, nobody in my family's addicted. Addiction is a choice. It's really not a choice. It's a disease. And the issue is when they can't get their drugs, then they need money. And when they need money and they don't have a job because they're drug addicts, that's when trouble starts to brew. So
sure, you start to see crime and you start to see that money used to go buy supply on the streets. And, you know, you and I have talked about this on several occasions, that it's the street supply that really worries us and concerns us. And we're trying to look and do as many things as we can on as many fronts as we can to help people stay away from that point where the addiction is driving them to seek what they need to feed it, which includes going out there on the street, because the street is where some of the deadliest, you know, doses are floating around.
All right, lots of drug questions coming in for Ask a Pharmacist Day. This is Dr. Sterling Elliott. Someone asks, my daughter says I'm going to get dementia because I'm on a statin. What is your opinion? I cannot get my cholesterol down with just diet. I've been on statins for about 30 years.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of pieces of information that are floating around out there in various sources on the internet. Dementia from a statin is not one that I've heard thrown at me before. I'm going to tell everybody listening right now that that's the case. All that said, what I will tell you is the same thing I've told anybody else who brings forward to me some of the things they've read on the internet. What we know about the statins is that for the expenditure that it costs, they are amongst the best drugs out there at helping reduce cholesterol, at helping prevent some of that buildup of that plaque in the inside of the blood vessels. The term for it that you'll hear used by your physicians is atherosclerosis. And when that happens, that's what leads to that horrible narrowing of those blood vessels, the stoppage of blood flow, and damage to the heart. And so we know that the statins historically have been our best weapon at preventing that. Now, and I would say that everything that we do and everything that we look at in this world, in our world, is a cost-benefit, a risk-benefit, really, analysis. And I think in this case, the benefits outweigh the risks.
Weight loss drugs, severe constipation, hair loss, depression. Everybody has questions about that. Are those typical symptoms?
They are. Certainly, you know, certainly I think bowel issues, both in terms of constipation and diarrhea, can be issues that you see from those. It's a consequence of doing so. The hair loss, I haven't heard of so much, but the depression, I do know that there are people out there that report depression. One of the things, you know, we've talked about this, one of the ways in which the weight loss drugs work is they diminish appetite, and they often diminish, people have often reported that they find that it diminishes some of their other sort of senses of seeking joy and pleasure in things.
Yeah, people say that it reduces their alcohol intake, their cannabis intake, their gambling. I mean, it's interesting. Does that all affect the same part of the brain?
Yeah, and you know, we've talked on the air at different times about some of the looking at the weight loss drugs to study things like helping people with addiction and things like that. And that's the thought is that that's the mechanism that they're looking at. And so we're trying to better understand why that happens.
Okay. Coming up next, more questions about statins and nasal sprays and how long meds are good after the expiration date. All questions for Dr. Sterling Elliott on Ask a Pharmacist Day. The first Monday of every month is Ask a Pharmacist Day on this show, because why not utilize what is available? And Dr. Sterling Elliott makes himself available. He's listened to this station since he was a kid, and he is the director of orthopedics. I know you're a clinical pharmacist, but it's not. Is it director of orthopedics at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine? Is that it?
Well, assistant professor of orthopedics.
Assistant professor. Yeah. That's the word.
I got a long way to go to get that to get to that spot, but it's great of you to promote me there.
Someone wants to know if it's bad to take Imodium every day.
It's not a great idea. Imodium is really one of those medications that's there for when you're having some diarrhea episodes. And if you're having enough of those, that really should be investigated by probably start with your primary, and then you may even end up at a gastroenterologist to really kind of figure out what's going on. The colon should be able to help you form a good solid stool on a routine basis, and the Imodium really shouldn't be needed in that regard.
How long is a med good after the expiration date? Boy, I have friends who are RNs and doctors. Everybody's got a different opinion on this.
My opinion is the medication is no longer good after the expiration date, because you just can't guarantee the stability of it, and you can't guarantee that the dose that you think you're taking is the actual dose. And so that's always going to be my advice. You guys can call me and ask me this question 2 months from now, and it's not going to change.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it's fine.
Does Prevostatin cause side effects in very elderly people, i.e. over 90 years old? In other words, are side effects more likely in that population?
Prevostatin on its own causes a set of adverse reactions, of side effects that it's independent of age. But what age can do is that as we get older, some of the processes in our body that break down medications and then help us get rid of them slow down. And so it's very likely that somebody that's elderly at 90 years old or plus may not be breaking down a medication as efficiently as somebody who's younger. The drug can linger around a little longer and may have more of a chance to cause some of those side effects.
What are the long-time side effects of compounded prescription of, and they wrote like ketamine nasal spray, 15%, 6 sprays per day. I don't know if that's the word they were looking for.
Oh, I don't know. That's a, you know, it's hard to.
They wrote K-E-T-T-E-M-I-N-E, yeah. Which is, you know, so I don't really know.
Well, I mean, ketamine is, you know, ketamine is a drug that sort of gained a little more use in the last few years. We've seen an uptick in using it. Anesthesiologists use it to help manage pain and kind of get people sedated as they're doing anesthesia. But we've also seen it used for other reasons, things like depression and that type of thing. I'll be honest, I'm not wholly aware of compounded ketamine nasal spray products out there. I would generally be leery of something like that just to start out with.
Yeah. Yeah. Please share your opinion of nifedipine. They wrote N-I-F-I-D-I-P-I-N-E for mm-hmm. peripheral artery disease.
Yeah, nifedipine is a drug that's used as, we call it a calcium channel blocker. It acts on the calcium channels. And it does. It is known to work and help people that are dealing with some of the effects of peripheral artery disease. I think if that's something that you're dealing with and you're seeing the symptoms, it's certainly an effective way to try that.
Okay, good. I love your questions, people. Thank you for sending them in. The last one is, I've been on metformin for about 12 years. Mm-hmm. I was told you shouldn't be on it long term. Is that true?
It's not necessarily true. I mean, metformin is a long-standing, tried-and-true drug that helps us treat diabetes, especially people with type 2 diabetes. And if it's helping and it's controlling your glucose and you're not having some of the side effects that come from it, like some of the gastrointestinal side effects and things like that, you may need to continue to use it. Now, you may be able to alter diet and manage your blood sugar that way, and that may help get you off of metformin. So, but to suggest that you shouldn't use it long term is probably not entirely complete, if that helps.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Dr. Sterling Elliott, clinical pharmacist at Northwestern Medicine and assistant professor of orthopedics at Feinberg School of Medicine. We appreciate your time, Elliott.
You bet. Have a great one.
That should be Dr. Elliott. Sometimes I just call him Sterling, so I thought, oh, geez, I don't know. I will always give you your official title, Dr. Sterling Elliott.
I appreciate it. It's probably one of the nicer things I've been called all day anyway, so you shouldn't feel guilty at all.
It's always a joy.